Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Ceasefire Radio. Today we have a very special show lined up for you, continuing a conversation about the human and psychological impacts of workplace abuse and how it affects people in ways that sometimes we don't even think about or recognize. I've had a number of calls. Even last night, I had someone call me, and the person was calling as an employee in Albany, working in Albany, and just talking about that they found out that we were doing this show and the fact that they're impacted and how the impacts of working, you know, within Albany, within a system that you would think that would deal with and address these issues, but then here they are struggling with a lot of conditions. It was a very heartbreaking conversation because she worked for a senator. And just talking with her about it, we had to share with her that this is nothing new. This is something that we've heard a lot of within Albany itself in terms of how many people are affected and how many people are struggling with these type of challenges. So when people talk about workplace abuse and workplace violence, they don't really get the good or a good understanding of how serious this is on many levels. And we've had a lot of people been reaching out as a result. A lot of people been hearing about the show and just really wanting to be a part of it. So today we're going to continue the show. We had a great show on September 15th, and today we're going to continue that. We have some great guests that are joining us, and so we're going to be hearing from them, too, about their lives and what they're going through and the experiences of what workplace abuse has done for them. So we're going to continue the conversation, and as we continue the conversation, we want people to just know that we're focusing on this from a very serious perspective, simply because, again, of the number of people whose lives have been impacted and how. So today we have some guests that are joining us, and we want to welcome them and thank them for opening up and sharing, because, again, we know that this is a very personal conversation that happens. Sometimes people don't want to share. Sometimes people don't want to open up because they fear the ways in which they could be retaliated or the retribution that comes from that. And we've seen it many times in many cases where people have chosen to speak up, speak out, and as a result of speaking up and speaking out, they become victims and they become traumatized because of just how they're blackballed and how sometimes in the environments that they work in or the industry, they can no longer get the type of help and support or even find employment again as a result of that. So we're going to continue the conversation today. And as I said, we have some great guests with us who are going to share their stories, and we're going to really get into this and really have a good conversation. So thank you all for joining, and thank you for listening. And we hope that today's conversation will touch someone's heart and mind so that whatever they're going through, whatever hurt and pain they're experiencing, in an unhealthy working environment, that they will be able to feel that there is hope and that they'll know they're not alone and that there are resources out here to help. Now, we're focusing on the psychological impacts, and I'm stressing on that because I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, if you have a bad boss, then you just find another job. Or if you have a bad boss, why don't you just do this or do that? It is not as simple as that. It is not as simple as just saying that a person can just get up and just leave the job that they're in just because. It is not as simple as just saying, well, you know what, there are bad people, so you should just get used to it or you should suck it up and just take it. It's not that simple. We're talking about psychological distresses that people are going through where their whole entire system, heart, body, mind, soul, and spirit is affected by what they're going through, and not just them, but also affects their family and loved ones. We have parents who have children, and the distress they're going through in the workplace is so abusive and so violent that they come home and they can't even spend time with their family and their children. We have many people who have had broken marriages, lost everything they've had as a result of just the unethical, the abusive, the decadence within the workplace that traumatizes them and re-victimizes them every day. When someone stalks you and just continues, you know, berating you, belittling you, and just really making you feel less than simply because you're trying to do your best and you're in an environment to work is not something that is easy for a person to just shake off and get over. And the reason why I'm stressing this is because whenever I have the conversation and I hear it more often, people always say, well, why don't they just get another job? It's not that easy for a person to just get up and get another job, especially when you've invested so much into an environment that you're working in, especially when you have history, especially when you have created connections with people, and the fact that you're just doing what you should do as a human being with morals and ethics about how you conduct yourself and the discipline of yourself, it's not that easy. So looking at this and talking about this and saying to ourselves that this workplace bullying or this workplace abuse is something that a person can just get over and get past, it's not that simple. It's not just about having a bad environment or having a bad boss or having coworkers that are continually picking on you or taunting you. We're talking about people who have gone through some things that really, really will shake you to the core. And even to the knowledge of the person who is talking and abusing them and really taunting and jeering them, even to their knowledge, knowing that they're doing that and seeing the impact on that person and still continue perpetuating that cycle of abuse, you have to question the mindset. When you have more narcissists and sociopaths working in companies who have management and leadership positions and not looking at the impact on the lives of the people beneath them, we really have to start questioning a lot of what we consider in society as to be the norm. Are these norms? And what are these norms doing in terms of the impact they're doing and making on the lives of people who are just decent people trying to make a living by doing the right thing? We're going to talk about that and we're going to look at that. So I want to thank my guests for joining, and I just want the guests that we had talked with who are going to be on our panel to press one on your keypad. We'll get you in the queue and we can start having the introductions and a conversation around this topic of the human and psychological impacts of workplace abuse and how we see those affecting people so we can get people to have a better understanding of that. All right. So for our guests who are going to be a part of the panel, please press one on your keypad and we will get you on and we can start the conversation. Thank you. All right, so we have a caller from 978. Thank you for joining.
This is Donetta.
Hi, Ms. Donetta. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I was on part of the panel the last month, and I'm listening in. And if anyone has, I guess I was going to wait till anyone has any questions so we can, maybe answer something. But
No, could you
it's
just do a brief introduction? Do a just brief introduction for those who are listening and who are not on with us for the last show.
All right. My name is Donetta, and it was through the workplace abuse over 10, 12 years ago, actually. But I'm very active with this. There wasn't enough knowledge about it. People were clueless as to these things happening, and at least now it's being brought out, through the workplace bullying, the healthy workplace laws that are being introduced or the bills that are being introduced. And so I'm here to try to hopefully bring awareness to it all.
Well, thank you, Ms. Danella. So, from your personal experience of dealing with this, what would you say in as a caption to the topic and the issue? Is this something that you think society is aware of, the severity of the issues, or do we really need to be doing more education and awareness on this?
That's a good question. I believe that it's a much more awareness now than there has been. It's becoming nationally known. People are actually have places to go now. They have hut numbers. They have more books and more literature. But there's so much more work that needs to be done with exposing all of this.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for being with us. Stay tuned. Stay on the line for a minute. Let's bring on some of the other panelists as well so we can get them on the conversation as well. So 973, thank you for joining.
Hello, sir. How are you this afternoon?
I am good, sir. How are you?
Very good. I'm
good.
Gonna have
thank
to
you.
Make this brief because I'm actually on my way to work at the moment. But I'm very happy to be part of the panel again. Some people might know my story from past experiences. I was bullied at work by one of the largest communications companies in the country, and ultimately let go from my job. The company spent an exorbitant amount of money trying to silence my voice, and ultimately has made my voice even stronger. I just found out recently that I lost my arbitration case with the company, and other sources want me to continue fighting, but unfortunately the fight is very draining, very self-absorbing, and I just unfortunately would like to close the door on that chapter of my life to be able to move forward. But it's very difficult when you see that the company has trained management to bully their employees and then ultimately fired the same managers that bullied me to silence their voice. So it's a very difficult situation that we're in. And when you're saying, why would we not leave a job that we were being bullied at? Because unfortunately, we also get complacent. We have bills to pay. We get accustomed to living in such a standard or a norm of, quote, life. And then we have bills. And I will quote what the court system told me, because when I couldn't pay my child support and was ultimately arrested because of being on unemployment for 30 months, that the judge stated, and this is a quote, get a job making the same amount of money as you were at the old job. Well, unfortunately, I wasn't able to find work because cause and effect, when I tried looking for work, now they see that I have a criminal arrest record because of being arrested for unpaid child support, and no company wants to hire me because they don't take the time and the energy to see that it was just for back child support. So now I'm making 75% less money than what I originally was.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Mike. Again, this is one of the reasons why this conversation has to happen, because you talked about the extended issues that comes from what people would just consider to be, oh, it's just a workplace issue. No, it's not. It affects a person's life in more ways than one, even outside of the workplace. So thank you for sharing that. Let me just bring on one other person real quick, and we can all just 201, thank you for joining. Greg, is that you?
Oh. Yeah, sorry. Hi, my name is Greg Morris. I'm a tenured journalism professor at Hunter College in New York City. And I became of the issue of workplace bullying based on my experiences as a professor at Hunter College. And I watched how other people at my college and in my department where I teach, how they were bullied and harassed, had their careers affected, had their health affected, and I decided that, one, I needed to protect myself, but also to try and help others. I mean, I'm not out there, like a sacrificial lamb, but I was a witness to so much bullying going on that I decided I did the first thing that a lot of us do, try not to participate, try not to make someone suffer because of what others are doing. But it reached a point where the bullying was so bad and so visible and that it was obviously affecting people's health and careers and their lives, that I tried to, you know, do whatever I could to make it clear that I'm not participating and that I'm ready to take any kind of proactive action that I can to make this issue public and possibly go away. So, well, one of the things that I did was I started a petition, not just for me but personally, but for the thousands of people in the New York State who have to deal with this kind of abuse on a day-to-day basis. And at this point, I would really appreciate it, Brett, if you could, if there were, you know, there's some things that you think I should have touched upon or spoke about, I would appreciate a little direction because my workplace bullying experiences has been going on for 10 years and it's been escalating. And I think I can provide some insight and stuff if I'm, you know, giving a little direction.
Well, I tell you what, one of the things, and thank you for sharing that, Greg, one of the things that I will definitely say, I've been getting a lot of feedback from people who are working in unhealthy environments and struggling with the psychological impacts, not just on them, but also their family. I mean, even last night I got a call from somebody that someone that I know personally who did not know that I was doing this, but was just going through something. I've gotten calls from, you know, people working in the health field, people working in mental health field, legal law enforcement. It's just a lot of things we're looking at where people are just at that point where they're hurting in their environment. But one of the things, a lot of the conversations I was having with these people were the fact that people just don't know what to do. They don't know how to address it. They don't know what to do. They know they're impacted. They're feeling the impact, but they just don't know what to do. I'd like us to, from the experiences that we've all gone through, to just share some of what can be done in terms of how does a person who is going through and living in this situation, living through it, how do they get the help or what kind of help is available for them even within when their workplaces do not see it or offer any kind of help? Where do they go for help? And I'd like that to come out of this conversation today from just our experiences.
That sounds really good. Would you like me to follow up on that?
Yeah, you could follow up on that. I'd like just each person to get a chance to share from their own personal experiences and what they've gone through, how and what kind of help they had gotten.
Okay. I'm a journalism professor, and I'm still working on journalism projects. And I've had a lot of news reporting experience. So for me, one of the things that I have this journalism spirit. And for me, one of the things that journalists do is they try to expose bad things. They try to expose corruption and stuff. And I've had some experience as a newspaper reporter and dealing with situations like this. And so what I decided to do was I first tried to initiate discussions in my department as best as I could about what was going on and the fact that I thought it was unfair and trying to get conversations going with my colleagues. When that didn't work, I started filing complaints, and I filed complaints. I mean, I'm at a major college at a major university in New York City, and there are some procedures to try and address what you feel is unfair being directed to you or someone else. So I filed complaints. I've been filing complaints at Hunter College for 10 years. I have prevailed in almost all of the complaints, but the complaints just generated feedback, kind of negative feedback, that causes some people to stop and think. And I decided to continue filing complaints, but then I started publishing them and making them notice. Going public, I think, is one way of dealing with your workplace bullying, but I also think that you try to resolve it, you look for allies, you try to work with your union if you have a union. You try to look for support. And then I decided I had to be more public about this and had to do more, but I can understand that a lot of people might not want to do that. But my suggestion is that you look for allies in your workplace. You try to, you know, open up communications with the person who's doing the bullying to see if there's some way you might be able to resolve it. And you keep records of everything that you do. And at the same time, so you got to, interact with family and friends, go to movies, prayer, if that works for you, to keep a healthy outlook on life while you deal with this kind of traumatic stuff. I have to say it's very difficult to deal with.
All right, thank you.
I'd like me to follow up on that. First and foremost, I've been a union member most of my life. I was a union member at the largest communication company in the country, the one that's petitioning all over the East Coast right now for over 18 years. And unfortunately, at least in the state of New Jersey, the union is almost powerless versus this company because of, dare I say, the greed or the corporate greed and how they can just throw unlimited supplies at a person, especially someone like myself with the grievance and arbitration process. I wouldn't be surprised they spent over $500,000 trying to silence my voice. Number two, if people are not aware, because I am the New Jersey Healthy Workplace advocate that we're trying to press laws across the country to try to even the workplace and to stop bullying, there's two states in the nation, Tennessee and Alaska, that have passed healthy workplace laws. If you you said you're in New York, if you're not familiar with the New York Healthy Workplace Bill, they're on social media sites as Facebook, Twitter, and they're trying to get laws passed. Massachusetts is actually getting a draft of their bill heard, hopefully within the month, and will hopefully be the third state in the nation to possibly get laws passed. I went above and beyond my union because I felt that they weren't doing the adequacy, and I went and filed police reports versus these managers, and therefore I truly believe the union did not fight for me because they feel that now ultimately they can be charged with criminal action because they didn't do exactly what they said. Unions in this country are becoming less and less powerful because of the, quote, lack of unity, lack of communication. Thirdly, if you haven't seen it already, I've been very fortunate, very blessed throughout my walk. There's a YouTube video out, When Bullies Become Bosses, and that's approximately a seven-minute clip that was produced on specific workplace bullying at my ex-job, and I've also been written up in the New York Times, and that summarizes the fight that I've been through, where the bullying ultimately lost my job, where I took the bullying home to my wife and daughter, and ultimately that destroyed our marriage, which in turn threw my house into a foreclosure, which now I'm filing for Chapter 13 bankruptcy, and is putting even more and more stress on situation, environment, and surroundings, not only people that I directly know, but indirectly know, because now I had to go take my wife back to court to lessen my child support payments because I can't find a job making that kind of money. So indirectly, now she cannot buy the essential needs and things that she needs to support herself and our 8-year-old deaf daughter. So ultimately, she's now relying on subsidies from the state of New Jersey. So where does this end? The repercussions are enormous, and this must stop. The one thing that has to stop is the need and thirst for greed and money. We do not need more than we can handle. We as a nation need to take a step back, breathe, be happy that we are what we are and have what we have. But if we can't clean up our own backyard, how can we force somebody else to clean up their own? So the common people I would say the middle and lower class need to stop playing amongst ourselves, need to be using the one love terminology and, you know, train up our own backyards before we can train up others. But we all need to realize that bullying is a much greater cause of stress and strain on just more than the individual. It affects everybody.
Well, you know, thank you for sharing that, Mike. And, you know, you talk about that, and you talk about exactly one of the reasons why we're raising the awareness on this, because you now have an 8-year-old deaf daughter who, your daughter is deaf, your family is now affected, your wife is affected, and now you look at these issues and say to yourself, where does this stop when you have people whose lives are affected in the ways that they are, not just within the workplace, but the expansion of family. Okay, so this is what we're dealing with right now, and this is why this conversation is so important, is because you have those type of impacts that are happening, and people don't realize that you have someone working in an environment, and that person working in the environment is not the only person who is going to be affected by the bullying and the abuse and the, you know, the stalking and all of that. It has a ripple effect. So this is why people need to understand. And Greg, you know, one of the things that you said, Greg, as a reporter, but let me just share this with you, Greg, and hopefully you can understand where I'm coming from, okay?
Yes.
I see a lot of articles and a lot of things being written about workplace abuse, but does not address this type of issue in terms of the psychological distress and the ripple effect on across families. And to be honest with you, I am very disappointed in a lot of what I see are articles regarding workplace abuse and workplace bullying. Because again, it's missing the real core of how serious this issue is. And even when I see a lot of people share articles with me and they're saying, Brett, did you see this article? Or I see a Google alert about an article on workplace bullying. To be honest, I feel like it's taking away from how serious the topic and the issue is. Okay? And I've got a lot of people who have also expressed that to me as well. When I raised it to them, I'm like, We're missing the real message that needs to come with addressing this topic. We're missing the severity of this because, again, I don't think we are focusing on it as seriously as we should when we look at the psychological distress. So just keep that in mind as a journalist and a person writing about this, that when you write about the topic and the issues, you have to write about how the impact are reaching across just that person, but the whole life spectrum of that person, how families are affected, how our children are affected, because those are the things that people see and they will go and they will gravitate towards in supporting and wanting to be a part of the movement. So, you know, Mike, you just shared that, and Greg, if you took what he just shared and even listened to what Danetta shared, you understand that for us as people who are writing and putting out social media and pieces on that, we really have to get people to understand how broad and serious this is.
I don't want to interrupt. I'm just going to make this real quick. What you just said is absolutely right. Absolutely right. About the way the messages that the news media is putting out there. And that's one of the things I want to address in these articles and op-ed pieces that I plan to write. And now I'm going to shut up so that someone else can talk. But again, you're just absolutely right. You just summarized it perfectly.
And adding to that, from what I'm hearing, even up to recently, what people are not understanding is what bullying really is. They're associating it with school bullying as a child and just being picked on by kids, only being picked on by grown-ups. And that's something that needs to be expanded upon. That has to be, out there for everyone to understand. It's so much more than that. It's overt actions and covert actions. And then there's another type of bullying where it's all bullying, but it could come as a purposeful means of actually getting rid of somebody that's, you know, in the company or in the school system or in the hospital. So it could be a group of people bullying for together for whatever reason, and it then sat down, and it's administrative, not accepted, but initiated. And this is so then you go into the psychological aspect of the, if you attack them in the cycle, you know, where who are they going to tell? Little types of things that happen, taking away certain privileges, not promoting people, you know, just making life very difficult, giving work assignments that are just impossible to complete, to break down a person. And who do you tell? Sometimes it's hard to find out who do you tell, because then they are not complete. And there's a spiraling down effect where the psychological effects come in later on.
Thank you for sharing that, Nonela. Thank you for sharing that, because that's exactly the reason why many people think that this is not really a serious issue. And many people say, you know, you're being childish in trying to address it or even thinking of or talking about it. And it's because of some of those things that you're saying, and exactly right. This is why it comes back down to what I was saying about how we promote and we talk about the topic, so that people are not trying to, or even if they're trying to, but people are not mistaking this just for some petty little thing that they would consider to be childish, that they really are understanding the magnitude of how this really affects a person's life and the severity of that. And it's really disheartening when you're talking with people about it and they're trying to downplay, you know, really what you're going through, because to them, they consider it to be petty and they consider it to be childish. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. And you just made me think of something else. Very recently, I'm back to work more on a temporary basis, on on-call basis. And someone with very good intentions, a relative of mine actually, said, "Now, Donetta, this is what you need to do. Make sure on your Facebook you take everything down that has anything to do with bullying and hide it." I said, "What?" I said, "I don't think so." I said, "Well, you know, if the principal or if the school or if this, anybody happens to go on your Facebook and check it and they see that, you know, they're gonna push you out. It's just known that they're gonna think of you as a problem, or you know, you may not get called to work again." And this is exactly what I'm talking. This is a family member that loves me, but they've been trained to think that it's more my problem because I'm talking about, you know, I'm advocating against for the laws.
Well, listen, you know, the truth of the matter is, and you know, a lot of people who have not gone through this, who have not experienced the distress and the heartache and the pains and everything that comes with that, to them, they will say whatever they have to say because, again, they're uncomfortable with it. But whether they're uncomfortable with it or not, this is something that you have to speak out on because it's something that affects you. All right.
Absolutely.
So don't be afraid, or don't let anyone tell you that, you know, this is not something that you should do, or it's making them uncomfortable, whatever it is. This is you sharing your story and putting, you know, what you're going through out there so that people can hear and understand that. And that's the reality of it.
And the reality that they think once it's out there, that knowing that these are the kinds of things that employers may look for, and they may turn around and immediately not hire somebody because of it or get rid of them. So that's how prevalent this is in the systems.
It's very prevalent in the system because, unfortunately, companies are training their managers on how to do so because of, quote, fear. You know, the other things that, you know, we need to go realize, and I'm going to go stress this again, is the fact of, and I specifically stated in the video, that I brought the bullying home. I was, you know, going through similar effects of, you know, similar to post-traumatic stress disorder. So what was the easiest target to take it out on? The person that I saw, my wife. So now we are separated for over 5 years. What did that do? I do not have direct contact on with my deaf daughter. So now, we'll just say a failure to communicate, I can't afford internet access. I don't have social networking to get into a deaf community so I can be practicing my sign language. So now I'm losing contact with my daughter because she's learning more and more and more. And what am I being? Now I'm not being the father that I should be. How does this affect my wife? My wife had a diabetic seizure because of, I believe, depression / lack of good eating habits because she's a diabetic and now she can't afford the food that, you know, she should be eating. And she does not have the support group, the network. It's the fact of, again, that thank you for not listening to your family members and, you know, not talking about it. We need to be talking about this constantly because, again, if these companies like the job that I'm going at right now, you know, is prevalent, you know, a majority of these people that I'm working with have criminal records, and they know that. So they think they could snap their fingers and bully and torment these people because they know they can't get a job anyplace else. So it's just, you know, it's getting more and more rampant because more and more people are looking for jobs, so it's becoming even more prevalent because these companies aren't held to, you know, higher, stricter regulations and accountability. And as was stated before, moral, ethical, why do we need to do this? What is this doing? You know, psychological damage for our future generation.
Well, you know, Mike, to be honest with you, a lot of, when you look at a lot of these company policies where they have harassment policies and policies that talk about sexual harassment and all these other things, there aren't any policies in these corporations or entities that deals with the bullying piece because it has become such a acceptable and normal part of our environment that we work in that is happening. And clearly it's being seen. Clearly people are seeing and understanding it. But then you don't have the backing behind enforcement to deal with it. So what do we do when we look at working environments where you have people who are calling out sick, people who are developing health complications, people who are, you know, their productivity level is down simply because of the things that they're going through. But then we still are not able to pass these bills or get legislation in place that can talk about and address the fact that the psychological impacts that are impacting people are something of great concern. You know, I saw an article the other day that talks about how many billions of dollars in productivity, you know, workplace bullying does every year. And I'm thinking to myself, well, the known fact that we have these type of impacts, why aren't there more resources that are put in place, or why aren't we addressing that more effectively? And that questions the mindset. So now you have to ask yourself the question, what kind of mindset allows this to fester within an environment, whether there is legislation or not, whether there is a policy or not, what kind of mindset allows this to fester in an environment, knowing full well that we have people who are being affected the way that they're affected.
It's the lack of accountability. You know, if in a company we used to have, you know, a structure that you worked away from the bottom to the top. Now you have white collar mixing with blue collar, and, you know, you work away from blue collar to eventually get to white collar. Now, through the last, you know, decade or so, I have a college degree. I know how to manage you. But if you don't know how to use the simple hand tools to do the job, and then you're put into a position to implicate laws and regulations on how a job is supposed to be done safely, effectively, well, we look at you and say, this is stupid. The job job I'm at now. They changed a bottle that they've used for 30 years. And they said it's going to save us money because we're using less plastic. They're wasting so much money on the retooling and the throwing away of product that it's probably costing them money. But unfortunately, it's the environment we're in. If it doesn't directly affect me, or I don't think it directly affects me, then why should I care about it? We have been taught, and unfortunately, we need to go teach our children this, you know, and yesterday. We do not live in a me, myself, and I society. What happens to me is affecting my sphere of influence. A happy employee is a healthy employee, is a productive employee. If I'm talking gossip and angry and upset, there's more likelihood of me getting hurt on the job. So what does getting hurt on the job do? It potentially could lead to a lawsuit. I'm out of work, medical bills, lack of this, lack of that. We need to get back to a simpler environment that needs to be structured on the keep it simple. This is common sense, you know, logical issues, and it's spreading rapidly because I'm hearing this. It's not just, I will mention the company, Verizon. I'm at the company now that I'm at. I hear people every day complaining about major companies. What are they doing? These companies now are swallowing up their competition, so they're letting employees go. We're struggling. You know, there's 100 people competing for one job now. And what you're doing is making a very, very dangerous environment we're in, you know, on multiple levels. We're ready for another psychological economic crash, and they don't want to say that we're here, but, you know, I know, Brett, you've spoken about, you know, depression and suicide. You know, that is the ultimate end result for the people that don't know how to network, that don't have, you know, a strong support structure from family, friends, community, and ultimately they give up and they lose control and say, I'm better off dead. And thank you, God, for giving me the will and the strength to persevere, and everybody that's on this panel.
We have serious issues. We have very, very serious issues. We have very serious challenges. And as you said, Mike, if we are not people or we don't know how to network or how to reach out for help, and this is what people don't understand. When you go home at the end of the day, when you're so psychologically burnt out, your psychological state distresses you so much that you're physically disabled when you go home and you can't even continue to build a life or do what you have to do as an individual. Those are the things that people don't see. Those are the things that people don't understand, that the psychological impacts can be disabling. Psychological impacts can make people do things that could be are considered bad. And, you know, sometimes when you hear about shootings in the workplace and this person goes in and shoots up a workplace and, you know, all these things that are happening in workplace where people are killing people and all that type of stuff. And you ask yourself the question, because, you know, people always say, my God, how can a person be so wicked and so cruel? But we never know what that person has gone through or have been enduring when they've been taunted and jeered and belittled and used, abused, and re-traumatized and re-victimized at the hands of someone doing this to them. And then they end up going in there. Not that I'm justifying it, but I'm just saying, when we look at and we hear of these incidents in workplaces where violence has happened, sometimes we have to look deeper and see and realize that there is something much deeper there in terms of what's happening. Greg.
Yes.
Greg, what are you seeing in terms of just that piece within the CUNY system? What are you seeing within, you look at CUNY as a system that is in it.
Well, continue. I'm sorry.
Do you think that the system itself putting things in place that not only protects its employers but also teaches students who are coming through that system what and how to deal with that in environments that they may be going out into?
Well, it's a CUNY. it's bullying is CUNY wide. It's an administrative tool to try to make people do things that you want them to do. It starts at the top, and it works its way down. It's much clearer at Hunter, where I work, because there have been a lot of newspaper articles. There were big newspaper articles in the New York Times and in the Chronicle of Higher Education, which reports on higher education, about the administration at Hunter and about how the president and some of the other top administrators humiliate and bully people. But the people at the top have a lot of power and influence, and so it sort of slows down. Is that me doing the interfering right now? Okay. It slows down, and so you got department chairs, like my department chair. One of his administrative tools is to humiliate people. And many of the people that I fight with in my department who are really bullies are people who have been bullied themselves, humiliated, mistreated, and they figure out a way to save their job, and then they participate in the bullying so that the people, so that they aren't bullied in the future. And students see this, because bullying at a college and a university, even though it's usually the professors who are the ones who, you know, there would be professors or somewhere or staff members who are complaining about it, but it infects students. Students see how professors and instructors bully their department members, and students are encouraged to participate. And they're going to take this into the workplace, which is one of the things that I find is so horrible about the way workplace bullying continues, is that education and journalism. What is journalism supposed to be about? Liberty, freedom, democracy, and encouraging liberty and freedom and democracy. But in newsrooms, some newsrooms of some real hellholes where there's a lot of harassment going, and that sort of surprised me when I was a journalist. And then when I went into the academia to see how we have supposedly academic freedom and academic integrity, but that's just an image. Beneath all that is harassment and lying and deceit. So, and it affects students. It shapes the way they perceive the workplace, and because the economy is so, and it's conspicuous now because the economy is so bad, students go into the workplace with the idea that they'll be able to get through if they join the mob, if they become complicit, if they don't exercise their rights, and it's a really horrific experience to see all this, and to see people pretend. People in places like deans and college presidents to pretend that this is the way to do things and this is academic freedom and academic integrity. And actually what it is, it's just another form of Gestapo fascism, you know, academic style. So I think it's a disgrace that colleges and universities, particularly at CUNY, allow this to continue to go on like this, pretend that there isn't a problem. I was told, I'll make this because I think I'm talking a little bit too much. I recently delivered a petition, a copy of the petition that I was circling to the chancellor's office at the beginning of the summer, and about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I got this reply from the university provost, and which she said that I think I'm summarizing right. She said there's no academic bullying or harassment at the university. We have strong policies that protect against workplace violence. And it's true. There are these policies and sometimes some discussions and some resources to deal with the so-called workplace violence that could happen at, say, at CUNY. But workplace violence isn't an issue at CUNY. But what the real issue is workplace bullying. So she basically said that, you know, she wasn't impressed with the petition. I could continue with it, you know, because that's an issue of academic freedom. But CUNY is safe now with its policies, and it's a big lie. But I can't say that the fact that she put this in writing, and I'm paraphrasing what she said, so I might not be as detailed as I could be, put it in writing, it set off some serious discussion now at CUNY among the organization. It's called the CUNY University Faculty Senate, which is the committee for dealing with academic issues at the university. They're picking up on this, and they're planning on a big discussion. Sometime at the end of the month about this issue that's going on at CUNY. Let me just wrap up saying, it's not in the shadows anymore. It is very open and obvious the way that people are bullied, and it starts at the top and it just flows straight down. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, Greg, you did. But here's the thing, and I'm glad that you shared that, because you just touched on one of the things that we had talked about. Even Donetta had added something on that as well. So you have an institution that's now saying that we do not tolerate workplace abuse and workplace violence here, but in essence is dealing with it and is experiencing it because, again, the powers to be really don't understand what this really is. Right? So they can say, for example, we have a harassment policy here that deals with harassment, but we still have people who are being harassed. But the type of harassment that they're getting is one that really people don't look at and see that.
They don't see it as harassment. They see it as an administrative tool. They ignore the people, the suffering, the damages to careers. People who are forced to leave the college or the university but they weren't able to get tenure because they were harassed so much. They just sort of ignore it. But I say ignore, just say they don't say it. I think it's a combination of both. It's just for me, it's impossible not to see how people are suffering when they're being harassed and intimidated. At CUNY, at Hunter College, I've had more physical altercations at Hunter College than I did when I was growing up on the south side of Chicago. I mean, it's that bad. I mean, and I know that I've seen it happen to others, and it's ignored. They see it as they don't see it as academic bullying. They see it as office politics. This is how we do things. This is how we keep people in line. So their framework encourages and keeps this going on because they refuse to accept the fact that what you're doing is not helping people helping a student. It's really planting landmines and things that are going to be really rough. And I'm beginning to stutter a little bit, so let me just wrap it up. It's a bad system, and then there are things that they can do to correct it, but they're going to fight it. They're going to fight it tooth and nail. That's the CUNY way.
And I'm going to jump in on that. They're going to fight it. I don't believe they are ignoring it because they don't know, or that I believe that, well, a major part of it is that's all fine and dandy with having you stripped of everything that you need. They don't care about that. It is a control issue, and you can call it anything you want. You call it office politics, you can call it whatever you want. It's still bullying, and it's still used as a means, and as long as they're going to use it as a means and be able to use it as a means of controlling and getting rid of people, then it's going to continue to happen. One of the things that needs to be done is what's happening now is awareness of all of this and giving people places and resources as to where to go and how to handle it initially.
Let me just add to that. Think about workplace bullying and academic bullying. It's corruptive. It corrupts institution. It corrupts the real principle of academic freedom. It corrupts the real principle of academic integrity, and it corrupts the education and the curriculum because it encourages dishonesty, it encourages deceit, and it encourages things that are anti-democratic and go against everything that we're raised to believe that's supposed to be great about America and our institutions. And so that corruption, I mean, it's got me stuttering because I have tried to initiate. I don't do it anymore now because I understand what the game is. But in the beginning, you know, I try to get people to talk about, you know, look what so and so did, look how so and so mistreated this person, and they blow it off. Well, that's politics, or what the buzzword is.
It's politics, but it's also that's where the psychological effects start coming in too. Or they just say, "Oh, it's only in your mind. It's not really happening. You have it's not happening."
No, it's the corruption. The part of the corruption is that it's corrupt and it's like eating and breathing toxic air. When you have to show up on campus, and they're looking, they brush it off, and they brush it off because there isn't any policies or tools to bring it to people's attention that what you're doing is cruel. In fact, cruelty, and I'm not, this is going to sound like an exaggeration, but it isn't. Cruelty is it's tolerated at Hunter. They have these pecking orders where, you know, I'm a tenured professor, so I can scream and curse and insult you because I have a greater position. I mean, that's not a campus with ideal academic freedom and academic integrity that allows that kind of status where I have better status than you, so I can mistreat you. And it's very clear. The people who are in a position to try to, you know, I'm talking about the chancellors and well, maybe not the chancellor. I don't have any such contact. I do deal with the administration at Hunter College, and the buzzword at Hunter College now is whenever Greg talks about academic bullying or corruption, it's dirty linen, and we don't talk about dirty linen. And we also don't do anything about dirty linen because it's not really that bad. And I'm not exaggerating on it. That's the way it works at Hunter.
As it probably does in so many places and in school systems, not just at the academic, not just at the college level. When this is what really gets my goat more than anything, is you talked about, Greg, how students are affected and what they're taught and even actually kind of used in the bullying. Well, I've seen that happen in schools where students are participating or used or controlled. And I'm talking kids under the age of 17. I'm talking elementary, middle school children that are used to help the administration do their job with getting rid of or pushing out or bullying somebody else, another teacher.
I can't disagree with you. It's the bottom line at Hunter College and the schools where you taught, the bottom line was we have to educate our students and get them ready to go out there and deal with the real world. Well, the truth is they're failing to do that because the bottom line is not educating students so much as money. At Hunter, the big thing is on funding, bringing in lots of money. Money. I mean, and I understand CUNY, you know, higher education is not well funded in the United States. It's not treated the way that it should be treated as it is in other countries. And so the emphasis is on we got to bring in funding. And when you start focusing on money, and not decide and not do any kind of evaluation is, well, how is this funding that's coming in helping our students with better curriculum and preparing them not just to be workers, but to be citizens, you know, to contribute to the public good. That's being corrupted in a lot of these places. And I see it clearly at Hunter, clearly. And I also see it clearly in the way that you've experienced it in the places that you taught. If they focus on teaching and doing the best for the students, there wouldn't be a bullying problem.
And, Greg, that's the reason why I asked the question the way that I asked the question, because if an environment that perpetuates the decadence of this type of mindset is teaching and allowing this to happen there, how are people taking it from there into these other places that they're going, into these other places that they're going to be working in, into other places where their experiences are going to be highlighted or what they're going through? You know, it's just really heartbreaking when you have to think about the fact that we're teaching a lot of our generation, young people, especially young people now who are going into the workforce, we're teaching them acceptable ways of living in unhealthy environments. And we're teaching them this is a norm that should never be and should never have been in the first place. We're teaching them that, you know, it's okay for you to work in an environment where you're being abused and bullied and you're stressed out and you fear coming to your job, you fear the people that you work with, and you fear management. There's so much fear, and we're teaching that that's acceptable because, again, we're afraid to define it and call it what it is or put policies in place that really can give people the leverage that they need or be able to say to them, well, you know what, we accept and we understand that there are these human conditions, and as an employee, you value the impact of what you're going through, and so we're putting things in place to make sure you're protected. That's why I asked the question today, is because it's very hard for us to not see, you know, coming out of such institutions. And some of us who are working, like Donetta and what Mike shared and talking about the environments they're in, some of the people who are managers and people who are causing these problems came out of environments where they saw abuse and it was okay. They saw this type of recklessness and it was okay. They saw this type of distress and it was okay. You know, so where do we go and how do we break the cycle and what do we say to people who are in and suffering from the distress and not knowing what to do? Because people are feeling like no one really cares. Okay, so we're going to continue raising the awareness. Not only are we going to continue raising the awareness, but we're going to make sure we clarify and we really are putting some sense of reasoning to this for people who are going through it. I get a lot of feedback from our shows sometimes where people say, oh, my God, you know, I've heard this whole term about workplace bullying, but I never heard it broken down to the point where you're talking about it, like the human impacts. And then I get a lot of people are saying, oh, my God, this is how I'm feeling. This is what I'm going through. So I guess I am being, you know, bullied or going through that abuse in the workplace. So, you know, we're going to continue the conversation. We're going to continue putting it out there in terms of education and awareness for people. And we just want them to know that, you know, don't give up. There are people who care. There are people who understand. There are people who really want to see, you know, an end to this. We want to see laws and legislation in place that gives people the protection that they need. And we want to make sure that people know that there are resources, places to talk with, and people who will listen. We're going to leave it at that for today. We're going to continue the conversation at a later time. We still have a few more parts to this series to continue going through. I know that this is a high time for distress for a lot of people as we come towards Thanksgiving and Christmas. Every year we get a lot of people who are in workplaces with a lot of distress simply because of that. And so we're going to continue this conversation through the holiday just to give people some leverage and to give them something to rely on. So thank you all for being with us. Thank you for listening. I'll give Ms. Donetta and And Greg, one last, you know, a few minutes to just state your last thoughts as we wrap up on this show today.
I think that what you pointed out, something that wasn't in too much of what I was saying, is there are resources, there can be resources and ways for people to deal with this awful situation in the workplace. I think one of the things, I think it has to be a particular spirit or a way of thinking, is that the best way to summarize this is people need to understand that they have legal rights and that there are historical rights, and they need to know what their rights are in the workplace. A lot of us go into the workplace and we hope to be, we want to work hard, we want to get along with everyone, but we don't understand our rights. And there are state laws and federal laws, and there's lots of more research out there about what is a really good, decent workplace and how you can conduct yourself, and that can help get you through really tight situations. So I'm glad you mentioned that, and I wish I had also. I'm just picking up on it right now the way that I should have.
No problem, Greg. No problem. It's all good. We continue. You know, that's why we have a dialogue, so we can, you know, we can pick up the pieces and we can add to and just really enhance that piece. So that's all right. Thank you for being here, Ms. Doneta.
Well, you know, I can only repeat what I said before. If you're just getting into it, if you're struggling with this presently, where do you go, what to do? And I said this before, and I will reiterate, it's not you. You need to be strong, and whatever resources you can find by Googling, thank goodness we have the internet, so we can do that. And just spread the awareness yourself. And that's how I like to leave it for now.
I would like to add one thing real quick. I think anyone listening to this show should get a copy of the show and just spread it around. It's a really humanistic way of informing people about really awful situations. And this is a really great show, and I plan to do as much as I can to make sure that everybody gets a link or a copy to, you know, as a support. I just want to thank Brett for allowing me to participate a second time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And I as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both, and thank you to Mike. Mike had to drop off early, so we thank him for also being a part of this and sharing as well. Do me a favor. Could both of you give me a call after the show if you have a few minutes? All right. I just want to follow up on a couple of things and just present something to you in terms of something else that I'm planning to do. So when you get a chance, give me a call if you can, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, want to thank you all for joining and listening in today. Want to thank you for the opportunity of sharing this with you and for you to listen. We ask you to share the archive with your network so people can understand that what we're talking about today are not simple things that people can just brush under the rug or brush off and think that there is nothing to it. What we're talking about today are some real-life challenges that are affecting people in ways that really needs to be addressed and understood. So as we wrap up today with the part two to the series, we will have three more parts to the series in the coming weeks, and we will let you know. We are looking for more people to share their stories. We had three other people that were supposed to be on the panel today that were not able to join at last minute for whatever reason. We just, you know, continue praying for them that all is well. And we thank you for tuning in. If you are going through a workplace bullying situation or being harassed or being abused in the workplace, you can reach us at 917-651-1889, and we would love to work with you and help you to get the support and services that you need. Again, that's 917-651-1889, and that's our number here at CISFI. We would love to work with you and help you through it. And that wraps up our show today on CISFI Radio. Thank you all for joining. God bless. Have a great day. One love.